discussion of the Avmalacha is Afia or it's Bishul, Gemara 9, Dalar and Beis, again, that we haven't yet gotten to, says that the Mishnah chooses to mention Afia, baking, rather than cooking, because that's the equivalent of cooking that you do on dough. But it also includes in the Avmalacha real cooking also, which obviously is that was done in the, which was done in the Mishkan with Bishul Samimanim as well. Meaning it's not only Afia that was done in the Mishkan, Bishul was also done in the Mishkan, but the Bishul wasn't done on edible food in the Mishkan. The Afia was done on edible food. The question is, which one's the Avmalach, which one's the Tolda? Okay, Bizman Hazeh, it's completely academic. There's no nafkamina whatsoever between an Av and a Tolda Bizman Hazeh. Now, Bizman Amigdash, there is a nafkamina to know what's an Av, what's a Tolda, because if you do Avos and Toldos of that same Malach, there's not multiple Chatos. But Bizman Hazeh, there's absolutely no nafkamina. It's purely academic question. Sefer Yerayim is quoted in the Eglei Tal in saying that Ofez the Av Malacha, and that's evidenced obviously by the fact that it's done in the Mishkan, and that was done by the baking of the Lechem upon him. Rashi, however, in Gimel Amar Aleph, says that the definition of an Av Malacha is not what was done in the regular running of the Mishkan, like the baking of the Lechem upon him, but that which was done in the construction of the Mishkan is what constitutes an Av Malacha, and there was no baking done in the construction of the Mishkan. Therefore, the malacha must be bishul, which is done to produce certain dyes, like we said, the bishul sammanim for coloring the various curtains in the Mishkan. The Rambam seems to include both as the av malacha. The Rambam in the ninth paragraph of Hilchos Shabbos seems to assume that both afia and bishul are the av malacha. Yerushalmi in the seventh paragraph of Shabbos says that it doesn't only include afia and bishul. There are obviously many other ways to make food ready to be eaten by using heat. There's roasting, frying, broiling, smoking, all of those things, hot smoke. Cold smoke is a different story. But if you hot smoke something, so all those things are forms of bishul. Cold smoke is just a flavoring. So that's not the same as the kind of smoking that we're talking about. That's the question, whether when it comes to bishul akum also, if someone smokes something, is that called bishul akum? That was one of the heterim. The OU had several heterim with regards to tuna fish years ago. I think now they've already fixed the whole problem anyway, and they have mashkichim doing it. But one of the big issues with tuna fish was not only to make sure that there were no treif of fish, they got mixed in on the fishing boats and there was no mashkiach out on the boats. That's what Rabbi Tendler made a whole to-do, that he wouldn't eat any of the OU tuna fish. He only ate the Dagim brand of tuna fish that they sent out mashkichim out on the boats. But one of the issues was bishul, that it was an issue of bishul akum, that they'd bring in all the fish and they'd put them in these big steam cookers. So of the various kulas that they had, that maybe it's not a lal shulchan malachim, maybe it is nechel kmo shulchai, you eat raw tuna and sushi. So you have a number of kulas with bishul akum. One of the kulas that they had was that it's mu'ushan, that maybe it's not called bishul because it's a steam cooker, maybe steam as a din of smoke, which is a very questionable one. But that was one of the various kulas that they had. I remember when I was in YU, I wanted to read up on tuna fish. So I asked Rav Shechter where I could read up on it. So he said, I just wrote an article in a Masorah journal, or there were several articles in a Masorah journal. I'll give you, and he brought me in a copy, and he gave it to me, and it was Rabbi Tendler's article, and his article, I think, were back to back to each other. So he gave me a copy of Rabbi Tendler's article, and I saw he had marked it up with his ha'aras on Rabbi Tendler's article, because it was a big machlokas between them. So one of the things Rabbi Tendler said in one point of the article, there's not a single maramakom to this assertion that Rabbi Shechter makes. Rabbi Shechter wrote in his on the side, Ayain, and then he gave like a list of various maramakomos. Kedarko Bakodesh. But that was one of the issues when it that comes up. But when it comes to Bishul B'Shabbos, we're talking about hat. Anything using hat is obviously going to be a violation of the Yisra of Bishul. Now, Rav Moshe in Igros Moshe, in the second chelik of Igros Moshe, Simon Pehei, defines Bishul as using any sort of heat to cause the item to be qualitatively changed. Solid foods, liquid foods, applies even to non-foods, the Rambam says in the ninth part of Hilchos Shabbos. Pouring hot water on wax in order to melt it may be a violation not only of being molded, but it may also be a violation of bishul. Now, in regard to Bishul Akum, whenever we talk about Bishul, you always have to think about all the halachas of Bishul, not just Bishul B'Shabbos, and figure out if the Gedarim are the same. So in regards to Bishul Akum, we know there is a heter called Nechel Kamo Shehu Chai, that anything that's edible raw is not going to be subject to Bishul Akum. So let's say vegetables that you can eat raw, if a guy cooks those vegetables for you, that's not a problem of Bishul Akum. Because the assumption is that Bishul Akum, not the assumption, the Mishnah says in Masech Savod Zara, that, and the Gemara explains, that Bishul Akum is Asur, because of kurva, because we're going to come too close to the gayim. But so the assumption is that if they're cooking something that anyways you could have eaten, even if they hadn't cooked it for you, so you're not going to feel so close to them just because they're cooking something that you could have eaten anyway. So that's not going to make such a big difference in your life. And therefore, there's no chashash, and the chachamim never asered such a thing in Bishul Akum. But when it comes to Bishul B'Shabbos, it's definitely aser. It is called Bishul. The reason we allow it by Bishul Akum is not because it's not called Bishul, it's because we're not concerned for the concern that they were worried about in general when it came to Bishul Akum. Now, if you take something that's already fully cooked, or something that doesn't require cooking at all, and you put it on the fire, the Rambam writes in the 9th parak of Hilchos Shabbos that you're pater. If it's already something that doesn't require any cooking, so then it's the Rambam says that you're pater. So the Sharetzion in Shin Yud Ches, Sivkot and Kuf Yudal, and those Kuf Yudal, it says that the Rambam is only speaking about things that cooking has no effect on them whatsoever. But if you take a vegetable, you take a carrot, let's say, and you cook it, so that certainly, it's improved by the cooking, that's certainly subject to Bishul Akum, even though it may have been edible raw. I mean, within this category of Nechel Kamo Shehu Chai, it's definitely Aser Mishum Bishul Akum. The question is it Isur Daraisa and Isur Darabanan? So the Rambam implies in the 9th paragraph of Hilchos Shabbos that it's not part of the Isur Daraisa, because he says that it's Pater if you take something that is already edible and you cook it. So the Shaar HaTzion just points out, no, the Rambam doesn't mean anything that's Nechel Kamo Shehu Chai, the same gedder you would have by Bishul Akum, that's going to be Pater in Hilchos Shabbos. He means something that's not really affected by the cooking, that cooking doesn't do anything to it, that you'd be pater. However, the Rabbi Kiva Eger in Reish Nun Daled disagrees with the Mishnah Berurah's assertion. He doesn't think that that's correct. He thinks that the way the Rambam is saying is that it's only an Isur D'Rabbanan, it's only Bishul Midrabbanan, when it's something that Bishul is not going to have a major impact on, when it's something that Bishul, rather was something that could have been eaten when it was raw. That's certainly the simple reading of the Rambam. Now, there are many poskim, the Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak, Reb Chaim Meiser, and the Achi Ezer, that agree that any source of heat that you would normally use for cooking is definitely a violation of the Isser of Bishul. However, Rav Moshe writes in Reb Chaim Chel Gimel, Rav Moshe talks about, what about a microwave? So it's a very fascinating tshuva, because I think I've mentioned it just recently, maybe in the Daf Yomi Shir. Rav Moshe, makes sense, Rav Moshe discusses microwaves. I think the tshuva was written in the early 1980s. So I remember when I was a child and we first got a microwave, and I'm not so old, I'm only 35, and we first got a microwave in the house, we thought it was like the most amazing thing in the world. It was like unbelievable. Also, you take a potato, I remember my brother taking potatoes all night, just putting one in after the other, 5 minutes. Anyone want a baked potato? Anyone? I did it in 5 minutes, and it was just like, my brother's weird like that. It was just like this unbelievable thing. It was brand new. Rav Moshe wrote this tshuva in the early 1980s, and they were describing to him what a microwave is. So Rav Moshe writes that would definitely be the Isur D'Oraisa of Bishul, because it's obviously going to be a normal use of heat to cook. Everyone's going to cook their dinner that way. Now, l'maisa, there's no nafkamina for us anyway, because you have to push buttons on the microwave and you're using electricity, and that's usher for a variety of possible reasons, but so l'maisa doesn't really make such a difference. But at the end of the day, whether it's an Isser of Bishul, Rav Moshe thinks it is an Isser of Bishul, because it's not, Rav Moshe thinks it does not have a din of Chamei Teveria, which is a told of Bishul. And Chamei Teveria is not cooking, we just saw in the Gemara recently. The Chamei Teveria, if you're Mevashel B'Chamei Teveria, that is not the Isser D'Oraisa. So Bishul, Rav Moshe thinks that a microwave doesn't have a din like Chamei Teveria, because it's going to be a normal thing that people use to cook.
So you have enough meat for a Bishul Akum.
Oh, definitely enough right. Kamina for Bishul Akum. There's a major machlokas haposkim when it comes to Bishul Akum. For a while, there were when Dunkin' Donuts first the first few got the Ashkacha. So we were one of the first ones here in the Five Towns. It was a long, long time ago that he got the Ashkacha here. It was owned by a guy. This is one of the only Vad stores that's open on Shabbos, because he was grandfathered in. I think they no longer allow that. They no longer allow a store to be open on Shabbos, even if it's owned by a guy, I think. But I guess because I'm not, for whatever reason. But he was grandfathered in. He was one of the old. So it was this one. I think there was one in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And they had different shittos, and one of them, if you wanted to get your eggs, you had to they would tell you have to come behind the counter and push the button on the microwave. The guy would tell you to push the button, and the other one, they just made the eggs for you. I think the eggs that they make in Dunkin' Donuts aren't, you know, it's definitely not all Shulchan Malachim, but you know, it's I think, I mean, eggs are eggs, but I think it's powder pre-cooked anyway. It's not I don't think it's really. It's really, you're really cooking it anyhow, so it's not, you're just warming up, or I don't know what you're doing with it. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but those aren't normal eggs. they're certainly not taking a skillet and frying an egg for you, although that would obviously be a lot easier. You could have a mashkiach, just turn on the fire. Now, when it comes to cooking solid foods, the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin Yud Ches, Siv Dalid, based on the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Chaf that we saw a while ago, and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed Ches, says that if you cook a solid food to the degree of Machal Ben Drusai, that's already the Yisur D'Oraisa of Bishul. Exactly how much Machal Ben Drusai is Machlokes, the Machlokes Rishonim. Some Rishonim holds one-third cooked, other Rishonim say it's half-cooked. Good, so that's a Machlokes Rishonim. But the words are difficult to understand, even. What does it mean, one third cooked, one half cooked? Cooking is a qualitative change, and we're giving numbers. We're quantifying a qualitative change. It's a very difficult thing to really put your finger on. What does that mean? A half cooked, a third cooked? So the Mishnah Berurah in we'll get that in a second. The Mishnah Berurah happens to Paskin in Reish Nun Gimel, Sifkat Lamed Ches, that we're machmir, we consider one third cooked to already be Nisud Daraisa of Bishul, but he says Bishasat Chak Yesh Lahakel, and there's enough kaminas about in Halachos of Chazara. We'll see. Hopefully, we'll get to it tonight. Chazara and Hatmana, which we've been discussing recently. Now, how do you measure a qualitative change with numbers, one third, one half? So the Chaznish in Siman Lamed Zayin says that obviously cooking is not a quantitative thing, it's a qualitative change. It's impossible to measure what half cooked means. So he says obviously what the Rishonim mean is that you figure out the amount of time that it needs to cook, and half of that time, even though the cooking process may speed up in the last half, right? It could be that when you cook something for a half hour, the first 15 minutes it still came out raw, and those last 15 minutes is when it really finally gets cooked. That's why if you go to a restaurant and they leave it on for just a minute too short, then you ordered medium rare, you're going to get raw. But they leave it on just for a minute longer, and then the cooking process speeds up a little bit. So that could be the case, says the Chazon Ish, but that's not, we don't measure by how much of a change, it's how we measure by how much time. So when we show them to say one third, it means one third of the time it would take to cook, and one half is the one half of the time it would take to cook. Now, when would you start? When do you assume the cooking process has started? So the Chazon Ish writes that it's as soon as it gets to Yatzal Edus Bo. Once it's at Yatzal Edus, once it's hot enough to be Yatzal Edus, so then from then on, from then till the end of the Bishul. Yeah. So Machal Ben Drusai is it would be hard to leave it up to us to decide what's Machal Ben Drusai, what is barely edible B'Shas Hadchak. So that's why the Rishonim tried to give a number. So they said usually half cooked or a third cooked is the general amount of time that somebody who's in a very difficult predicament would eat it and wouldn't say, ah, there's no food here, there's nothing to eat. He would eat it if he was in a difficult predicament. That's what Machal Ben Drusai means. Rashi gives this whole story about this Ganav or whatever, but the point is, just someone in a difficult predicament would eat the food. So the Rishonim quantify it. They try to give a shear for it, because otherwise you can't leave it up to each individual to figure out.
But I'm saying, but they're also, even if you left it up to each individual, some people like it more well done, they wouldn't eat it. It would need rare state.
That's probably why Chazal Davka said Kimachal Ben Drusai. They gave an example of someone who
right.
was in the habit of eating this kind of thing. That someone who's in the habit of eating this kind of thing, who has always had to eat these kinds of things, what would he consider the bare minimum that he would consider edible? So that's how the Chazon Ish says. In the Pnei Shabbos, he says there's no way to measure it, so you have to just figure out on a case-by-case basis, which sounds difficult, but it's, and certainly let's less clean, less neat than the Chazon Ish in terms of defining it, but it's it has significant svara to it, meaning different food items may be more edible when they're a third cooked than other food items might be. You know, if you have, meat when it's a third cooked may not be as edible as something else that's a third cooked. Meaning, it could depend on a case by case basis. Probably, if you were someone who was constantly forced into this kind of situation, it would depend on the situation. It wouldn't always be that you'd be like, oh, it's one third of the time, so that's it. So it could be that you have to judge on a case by case basis, but that's of course very, very difficult to do. Now, once it's already kemach, Ben-Drusai, are you allowed to cook it further? Now, obviously, Midrabanan, you're not allowed to, but Midaraisa, is it a violation of Midaraisa to cook it further? Or do we say, Ein Bishal Achar Bishal? It's already halachically Mavushal, so now you're not going to violate Bishal to cook it further. So the Shulchan Aruch, in Shin Yir Ches, if Dal Paskins, that it's Nisadaraisa to cook it further if it's not yet mevushal kol tzarcho. So if it's just at machal ben drusai and you're cooking it from there to mevushal kol tzarcho, that would be an issur daraisa. But the Biralacha quotes many rishonim that hold that it's only an issur drabanan, it's mutmi daraisa. And Biralacha concludes that Shulchan Aruch paskins what he paskins, but if the food was already cooked in that way, then you're allowed to eat it on Shabbos, meaning that it wouldn't be a violation of the issur daraisa of bishul as in a b'dieved situation. We'd rely on those rishonim. In any case, Mishnah points out, once it's fully cooked, even if it's still mitzdamik v'yafalo, once it's mevushal kol tzarcho, even though it may benefit from being on the flame a little longer, the flavor may be more evident, it may be stronger if you let it cook a little longer, but it's mevushal kol tzarcho already, then it's definitely not subject to the yisur daraisa of bishul. Now midrabanan, the Shulchan Aruch, and Shin Yirches, if you dalet, and if you zayin, and the Mishnah Berurah there points out, midrabanan, it's even usher to place any not completely cooked food in an area that if you leave it there long enough, it could technically become cooked. We just discussed that in Tosfos on today's daf, that it's if you put something in a place where if you leave it there long enough, it would become more cooked, even if you're only planning on leaving it there for a little bit, that would be an Isser Midrabanan, because we're afraid that you're going to leave it there for more than a little bit. So that's when it comes to cooking solids. What about cooking liquids? So the melacha daraisa of cooking by liquids is obviously not defined by machal ben drusai. You cook hot water. There's no machal ben drusai. It was edible cold. It's edible hot. So how do you define it by liquids? So the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Mem says this is defined by yad soledispo, which the Gemara says is the same as kreso shaltina knichvispo, the heat that it would take to scald a baby's stomach. Now, what does it mean yad soledispo? So yad soledispo pashtus, the way the Rishonim seem to explain, doesn't mean that you stick your hand under hot water and you wait until you just can't take it anymore, and then you pull back, and when it's at that heat that you can't take it anymore. Pashas, it sounds like that the hand would withdraw from it means that if you put your hand under the water expecting warm water, but you weren't expecting it to be that warm, that you would immediately, your first reaction would be to pull back. It's a very hard thing to measure because you can't measure a reaction if you're expecting it. If you know that you're about to touch something hot, so you'll probably have a little more confidence. But in general, you turn on the faucet, and it feels hot, so sometimes if it feels a little too hot, you'll pull back. So that's really the technical definition of Yad Soledes Bo. But in terms of practically speaking, so the Ben Ish Chai in Parshas Bo writes that whenever it's too hot to drink, that's called Yad Soledes Bo. So that's also a very difficult thing to measure for different people. Too hot to drink means different things. For me, it's a much lower temperature than it is for, let's say, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law. They like very, very hot drinks. I think it's a generational thing. I don't know, but I take hot water out of the urn and it's very, very hot for me. I can't drink it. They taste and they're like, it's cold. What is this? So it's a very difficult thing to measure. It would be much easier if we can give a certain amount of degrees, which obviously the Gemara didn't. They didn't have methods of measuring these kinds of things. But Rav Moshe in Aruch Chaim Chelik Dalit, Simenayin Dalit, in his that, the big, big Bishul Tshuva, the one that the Tshuva that he writes to Rabbi Eider, says that if it's at least 110 degrees, it's at least Safek Yatzel Ledesbo. It's not Vada Yatzel Ledesbo until it's 160 degrees, meaning he has this window where you have to be Machmir in both directions, which maybe we'll discuss what that means to be Machmir in both directions. Rav Shlomo Zalman has based on the Gemara in Chulin. Gemara in Chulin says that the Beis HaShechita is Tzonenes, that the area where you shecht an animal is cold, and we know that in certain kosher birds it's 45 degrees Celsius in the area where they shecht the animal. So Yatzel Ledes, he says, has to be at least 45 degrees, because if the Gemara calls that cold, so then it's got to be Yatzel Ledes has to be hot, at least it's got to be hot, so it's got to be more than that, 45 degrees Celsius. They say from Varon Cutler, Rabbi Eider quotes from Varon Cutler, that it's 120 degrees Fahrenheit, 49 degrees Celsius. Now, whether cooking something that's already Yatzel Ledes even further is a violation of Melacha D'oraisa, so that's a Machlokas HaPoskim as well. Now, that is all in terms of just the basic idea of Bishul. What about if you have something already cooking and you want it to cook more quickly? Even if, let's say, something's already on the fire, you're not allowed to do anything that will make it cook more quickly. So it's usher to raise the flame. Obviously, that would be Havara anyway, and it would also be Bishul because you're making it cook more quickly. This is a discussion in Ribu Bishurim as well. For instance, the post can discuss, what if you're cooking for a Cholosh Yesh B'Sakana? So can you add a little more? The Gemara in Erevin has such a sugya. The Gemara in Erevin talks about if you have a tinok, you have a baby that has a milah on Shabbos, or is supposed to have a milah on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, obviously prepare the warm water beforehand, because once he has the milah, he's considered Cholosh Yesh B'Sakana, you need to bathe the baby. And that's considered to be very, very important, that you bathe the baby, that you wash the baby with warm water. So ishtapa chamime, the Gemara talks about, what if the warm water spilled out? And now it's Shabbos and it's time for the bris, what do? The warm water spilled out. So the Gemara says, well, you have a built-in helper for the baby, and that is that you have a built-in chola right there. Who's the chola? The mother. The mother is always, she's Yoledes, she just had a baby. So I asked the mother if she feels like she needs hot water. And if she says yes, that she feels like she needs hot water, then what you're able to do is you can heat up the water for the mother and use the extra water for the baby. You could use whatever water, you could add in a little extra and cook up the water for the mother as a chola and use the rest for the baby. So there is a discussion 2 days in Tosos and Gittin on Daf Ches. What does that mean exactly? That the mother is a chola and therefore you're heating up the water for the mother. So Tosos says the baby gets a meal on the eighth day. How long is the mother a chola sheyesh b'sakana? So he says 3 days vada she's a chola sheyesh b'sakana. That's the number one question when I get a call from a hospital. Mazel, we had a baby. Am I allowed to push the call button on Shabbos? What do I do? Right, that's always the question. So the answer is that obviously you try to minimize chola Shabbos as much as possible. Push the call button with your elbow or whatever with a shinui. But I said, you know, if you need a hot shower, take a hot shower. If you need a ham sandwich, okay, not that. But you know, if you could do anything when you're a chalashiyash basakana, that's the ikar adin, that's the halacha. So Tosfos says, but that's for the first 3 days. From day 3 to day 7, if she says tzricha, if she says that I need it, so then we listen to her and she's considered chalashiyash basakana. If she says that she needs to eat on Yom Kippur, she could eat on Yom Kippur. She has din of chalashiyash basakana between days 3 and day 7. After day 7, even if she says she needs to eat, we ask the doctor, and if the doctor says no, she's out of her mind, she doesn't need to eat, she's totally fine, so then she will not be permitted, right? So after day 7, she doesn't have a dinner of Chol Sheish Pesach. When's the baby getting a bris? Baby's getting a bris on day 8, right? So says Tosfos, what's going on over here? How can you ask the mother, how, you know, if she wants hot water, if she says she wants hot water, then good, you can make the hot water. So Tosfos says, it must be that we're not heating up the water for her. It has to be that we're having a guy do it. It's a miru la'akum, that a guy is heating up hot water for her, and what you see from here is that for the sake of a mila, we would not be allowed to heat up hot water for the baby. That for the sake of, we would not be able to even ask a guy to heat up hot water for the baby. A miru la'akum wouldn't be mutter to permit a mila, to allow for a mila to happen on Shabbos. Quite a chiddush, Tosfos says. Then Tosfos quotes the Bahag, who disagrees. The Bahag says, well, Tosfos, his cheshbon is off. He says, wait a second. The baby's Bayom HaShemini, Yimol B'Sar HaLasa, right? The eighth day he gets a Bris Mila. So he was born the previous Shabbos, obviously, if you're giving him a Bris Mila on Shabbos. Is the mother necessarily past 7 days already from the birth? He was born the previous Shabbos. Let's say he was born the previous Shabbos, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the bris milah is the next Shabbos morning, 9 a.m. So the mother's still within 7 days. By the mother, it doesn't work based on calendar days. It works me'es la'es. It works in 24-hour days. Because otherwise, it would be ridiculous. If you think about it, let's say you have a woman who has a baby, let's say Shkia tonight, if this is accurate, it was 4:33. So you have a woman who has a baby at 4:30 on, what day is it, on Tuesday, right? So you're going to say, if it works by calendar days, that means she has Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, where she could be a Chol HaShiyosh B'Sakana. But if she was lucky enough to have the baby at 5 o'clock, then she has Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Then she gets a whole other day. For a half hour later, she gets to be a Chol HaShiyosh B'Sakana for a whole other 24 hours. No, that's crazy. It must mean, says the Bahag, that it works on 24-hour periods, and it could be that the mother is still a Chol HaShiyosh B'Sakana, that you're allowed to do Amir La'akum. So in that context, Tosfos talks about, but wait a second, why can't you just add more water in anyway? Once you're cooking anyway, once you're doing it, so that's the discussion of Riboy B'Shiurim. So the question is that really Riboy B'Shiurim? You put more water into the pot, and then you put the pot on the fire? So the Rishonim assume that, yes, that is Riboy, that does involve more Malacha, when you put more water into the pot, because it will take a bigger fire in order to cook it. You're going to end up turning the fire a little higher, and there's a difference in your bishul, in your iser of bishul, when you turn the fire lower and when you turn the fire higher. When you make a bigger fire, it's a bigger bishul. So it's anything that you do to make it cook more quickly or more effectively, to accelerate bishul, is also included in the iser of bishul. So if you take a pot of fully cooked food, not yet fully cooked food rather, and you move it closer to the fire, even on a blech. Let's say it's on a blech, it's in a warm part of the blech, but you move it closer to the fire and it's not yet fully cooked, so that's being memar the bishul. That would be a violation of bishul. What about, so the Shulchan Aruch, the most famous example of being memar the bishul is what the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Shin Yud Ches, Sif Yud Ches, about hagasa, about being megis a pot. The Shulchan Aruch says that it's also to stir a pot, or even, Shulchan Aruch says, to scoop with a spoon when the pot is still on its heat source and it's not yet fully cooked, because when you stir it or scoop it, the contents of the pot are going to move around and the heat's going to be somewhat redistributed, and when the heat is redistributed, that's going to cause it to cook faster. So there's a So that's in terms of stirring. Now, the Mishnah Brura in Shin Yud Ches writes that even if you have something that is fully cooked, we should still be machmir not to stir it or remove with a spoon when it's still on the fire. Because maybe you think it's fully cooked, but it's not really fully cooked. So we should always be machmir to remove it from the fire, even though it's still hot, and then spoon it out and stir it when it's off the fire. At least not when it's on the fire. So the Rav Moshe writes in that same big tshuva that he writes to Rabbi Eider, he says that when the Mishnah Brura says that you should be machmir b'hagasa k'she'enu al gabei ha'esh, that you shouldn't even stir it when it's not on the fire, he's saying that you're permitted to be machmir, says Rav Moshe. But he's not saying that that you have to be machmir. It's quite a chiddush also. I know someone recently I got a call recently from a woman who took a Bishul B'Shabbos refresher course or something, and said, when I take my challenge off the fire, I'm not allowed to stir the challenge, just to, you know, the grease, it's all, I just want it to mix in well with the potatoes and the meat. I can't mix it after it's already off the fire and it's fully cooked. So where did that come from? The person who taught I got it from the Mishnah Brura. But I think the minig is like Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says, no, the Mishnah Brura just means it's not yuara. It's not yuara. It's not considered to be arrogance, religious arrogance, to be machmir like such a thing. But you're allowed to be machmir to take out food with a spoon from a fully cooked dish that's off the flame. But you don't have to be machmir. Now there is also a discussion about another way to be mimahir the bishul, and that is, as we just mentioned, when you have more food in the pot, the bishul takes longer. Less food in the pot, bishul takes shorter. So what if you take some food out of the pot? Is that also a violation of being mimahir the bishul? So it seems to be logical that it should be a violation of causing the bishul to happen more quickly. Let's say you have an urn that has hot water in it, hot water urn, and it hasn't yet reached its highest temperature. So you remove a little bit of water from it, that will cause it to reach its highest temperature more quickly. So is that going to be a violation of Bishul? It would seem to be Aser. And that's what the Shmir Shabbos Kilchus on Perek Aleph Ha'aretz Adivav, and Simcha Ben Kohen quotes this in his Shabbos Kitchen also, Paskin. However, that's only if it was never previously cooked. Once it already got to its highest temperature, and now it's just in a rewarm cycle, so then it would not be a problem because we paskin, there's a machlok rishonim, whether yesh bishalach or bishal b'davarlach or ain bishalach or bishal b'davarlach. And once something that's wet has been fully cooked, can you violate bishal on it again? We paskin, the Ramah paskins, that yesh ein bishalach or bishal b'davarlach unless it's nitzdan in legamri. That if it hasn't yet fully cooled down from the first time that it cooked, so then it's not a violation of bishul any further on a davalach. So even if you are speeding up the rewarming in the urn in the next cycle, it's not a problem if it ever got to its highest temperature. However, Rav Moshe has a chumrah. We had a lot of kulas from Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe has a chumrah over here. Rav Moshe, and again in that same tshuva, says that you should never put up the hot water in so close before Shabbos that it's not going to have time to boil before Shkia. And the logic is, he says, that we're concerned somebody's going to take some hot water out before it reaches its highest temperature, and that's going to cause, meaning not only is he worried about this concern of taking hot water out before it reaches its highest temperature, but he made a gezerah. He shouldn't put up that water so soon before Shabbos that it's not going to reach its highest temperature before Shabbos. You want it to reach its highest temperature before Shabbos, so that any time you're taking out water on Shabbos, you're never going to have a problem. That's how Rav Moshe writes. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoting Shmir Shabbos that's a nice level of zehirus, but it can't be that's required in the halacha. No, who authorized us to make our own gezeros bisman hazeh, to have such a thing that you can make a gezerah that you're not allowed to put out water? There's another reason why you may want to do it, because it used to be when in Rav Moshe's time, the hot water urns were big metal urns with a spout at the bottom, and that was it. Nowadays, in almost every kitchen, you find the hot water urns are the pots that pump from the top, right? And they have a display on the outside that shows you how high the water level is. So there is a significant literature that I discovered when someone asked me the question years ago, that if you fill up our pump pots, they call them, which has other issues. Now they sell them under Jewish ownership because you have tefillas kelim problems. They used to say, don't worry, you can just tovel it and wait for a few days, it will dry out and it will be fine. So I remember my mother-in-law got us a brand new pump pot, she got the fanciest, newest thing, and I put it in the mikveh, and kaput, it didn't work. So I had to quickly replace it with the same one. But now they put it, make it under Jewish ownership, so you don't have to worry about tefillas kelim, that the company is owned by a Jew. So, but there's another issue over here, and that is that if the water in the indicator was never fully cooked, the water in the indicator is not in the part that's getting cooked. So it's a little bit warm, but it's not really cooked. So when you take water out of the pot, all the water gets mixed in. It's chozer v'neir, right? The water from the indicator goes into the pot, and then it all gets mixed together again. So that water from the indicator is going to become mevushel when you take out the water. So that could be a serious issue. So I remember that when I was in Boston for a rabbinic training thing years and years ago, and Rabbi J.J. Schachter lived in Boston at the time, told me that that the guy who invented the pump pot was someone who davened in the same shit in the Maimonides Minyan in Boston. So I called him up. I said, "You got to get me this guy's phone number. I got to talk to him." So I spoke to the fellow, and he was telling me how a million different people ripped him off already, and he used to be the only one that makes it, but now like 15 other people make it. Okay, I said, "No, but what about this? Did you ever?" So he said, "Yeah, I have a tshuva from Tzomet." Or from one of the, from one of these organizations that deal with halacha and technology, so the Institute of Halacha and Technology, something. I have a tshuva from them, from Rav Halpern, I think it was. So I said, "Oh, can I see the tshuva?" He said, "Sure." He sent me the tshuva, and the tshuva said that this is takava problem, and therefore the only way to solve this problem is you have to let it heat up all the way before Shabbos, and then take out a cup of water before Shabbos so that it will get mixed up. the water from the thing will get mixed in with the, and that way, even though the water that's in the tube now is going to cool down a little bit, but it's never going to be stunning the gamri, it's not going to get totally cooled down, but at least now all the water had once been mevushal, and once it's stunning the gamri, zain bishal achar bishal b'davar lach, then you could, but if you never took out that initial cup of water, then when that water from the tube goes back in, then you can have a problem. That's how the tshuva said. So I called the guy up. I said, and the tshuva said, and you should have a. It should be printed on the pot. It should have a big sticker attached to the urn that says this instructions. Otherwise, no one's ever going to know this, and everyone's going to make a mistake. That's what it said in the tshuva. So I called the fellow up. I said, how come I never saw a sticker like this? He says, what do you mean? We included it in the instructions. That it's a note in the instructions. Now, who reads the instructions to a pump pot? I mean, what kind of moron can't figure out? You fill it with water and you plug it in. No, that's, you're sitting here, oh, water, you know. So it's, I couldn't believe it. I said, that's really not good enough. And it may depend on the Metzius, a different, you know, he says his technology was ripped off by other people. It could be that they figured out a way to make it that it's already more than Yatza Ledes, but in the indicator also. But the tshuva that he had, at least from that one, did not seem that in the indicator that it was more than Yatza Ledes. So that would seem to be a real issue. Now, there is this whole issue of removing, going back to the issue we were talking about before, of removing. So why am I mentioning that? Because you don't have to accept Rav Moshe's chumrah that removing water from the that you have to have the urn at its highest temperature before Shabbos, lest you remove water on Shabbos when it's not yet at that highest temperature. First of all, it's very unlikely because the first time you remove water on Shabbos is probably not while you're at shul, right? It doesn't take that long for it to get to its highest temperature. So you don't have to accept Rav Moshe's chumrah to be machmir for this anyway. You may want to get it to its highest temperature just to take that one cup of water out before Shabbos to worry about the water in the indicator. So that's probably not a bad idea to be machmir for that. But going back to that issue of removing water from a pot, the Minchas Yitzchak thinks that there's no issue of removing food from a pot. That's not called speeding up the bishul. He says that's only removing, that's hasaras hamoneya. That there's something that's stopping the bishul from happening more quickly, and that is the presence of more food. So when you take some of the food out, it just allows the bishul to happen on itself more quickly. But that's not called that you're actively speeding up the bishul. And he says you can prove that it's mutter because Shulchan Aruch Paskin says you're not allowed to take food out with a spoon. Because it's when the chalon's not fully cooked, Shulchan Aruch said we just said hagasa, right? That you're not allowed to scoop it out with a spoon or to mix it while it's on the fire. Why? Because the redistribution of the heat. Forget about redistribution of the heat, says the Minchas Yitzchak. What about the fact that there's now less food in there? So it's going to cook more quickly. Elamai says, you see, the Shulchan Aruch isn't concerned about this. That less food doesn't necessarily mean. So Rav Moshe's chumrah is really a chumrah al gabi chumrah, right? To be machmir at all in the first place, that removing food from a pot is called mar the bishul, that's one chumrah. But then to be machmir on top of that, that you're going to make a gzera that you have to make sure the water gets to its highest temperature before Shabbos, that's a chumrah al gabi chumrah. So that's a significant chumrah. Shulchan Aruch and Rishon Dal says there's another way to do the mar the bishul. He says, you're not allowed to put a cover on a pot that's not yet fully cooked, because that also speeds up the cooking process. I mean, if the cover is off and you're putting it back on, so that also will cause the cooking process. Ramah in Reish and Tess says there's another way, that if you close an oven door when there's food inside that's not yet fully cooked, even if the pashtus, even if the oven is off, but it's still hot, it could be that that's a violation of being mimahar the bishul. Because when the oven door is open, it's pretty cool. You close it up and it gets hot again. So that could be a violation of being mimahar the bishul. That could be a violation of other things also, if the oven is on. What? Hatmana. So let's talk hatmana a little bit. It's probably not hatmana for the following reason. There are several qualifications that you need for something to be atmana. One of the qualifications that you need for something to be atmana is what we saw in Tosfos today, is that the it has to fit snugly around the pot itself. Whatever the davar amosif hevel is, if you're matmin beremetz or whatever, so the remetz has to actually be touching the pot. That's why Shlomo Zalman thought that a crock pot was atmana, because it actually fits perfectly around the pot, that it actually touches the side walls of the pot. This is a discussion the post can talk about with a warming drawer. Is a warming drawer atmana? So some say, yeah, it's so tiny, it's a little thing in close quarters. But Pashtus is that it shouldn't be Atmana really, because it's the sides don't touch the unless you have a pot that fits mamish exactly into the drawer, the exact size of the drawer. I would think that probably would not be a problem of Atmana. You have other issues when it comes to the warm drawer that need to be discussed that we're probably not going to have a chance to discuss tonight. But there are plenty of other issues, but the Atmana Elaniyastaiti doesn't seem to be one of them. Now, the Gemara in Shabbos of Lamed Daled says that, let's talk Atmana a little bit since we started with Metomin, you're not allowed to be Matmin, and we just saw today's daf also, you're not allowed to be Matmin in anything that's most of Hevel, even May Erev Shabbos, Shem Yechat B'Kholim, lest you come to stoke the coals and then violate Bishul and Mavir and everything. So that's even before Shabbos. So there are four conditions that have to be met in order for Hatmana to be a problem. Number one, the food has to be totally wrapped. The Rama writes in Reshim Gimel, we mentioned in this morning's daf, that if it's not totally enclosed, it's mutter. So what that means exactly is a bit of a debate in the poskim. Rav Shlomo Zalman held that a crock pot is a problem of Hatmana. It's not fully enclosed by the metal heating element. It's only enclosed on the bottom of the pot, I mean the sides of the pot. The top is not enclosed. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, yeah, Rubo is also, that's also Hatmana. Rav Shlomo Zalman was Machmir, that was the last psak, they say, Rav Shlomo Zalman Rabach's life was on the crockpot. Was that was his last tshuva that he ever gave, was that the crockpot was Aser. Chavrusa Shlita, Rabbi Razner, used to say that Dr. Abraham told him that Rav Shlomo Zalman was crying when he wrote that psak. That he felt that he was, whenever he had to give a psak l'chumra, that would make people's lives harder, particularly women who work so hard, he felt terrible about it, and he was crying that he had to be machmir, that he knew it would cause hardship. How much hardship is it to make a cholent in something else other than a crackpot? Okay, Rav Shlomo Zalman was machmir based on hatmana. That's the first thing. So it has to be totally, totally wrapped. And Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks it means even if it's rov, even if it's mostly surrounded. It seems from Rav Moshe, that same tshuva to Rabbi Eider, that if it's not covered on the top, that it would not be hatmana. Rav Moshe understands Ramah, probably kipshuto, that it has to be completely enclosed for it to be hatmana. Second tenai of hatmana is that the food has to still be in a kli rishon. If you remove the food from the kli rishon, from the pot that it was cooked in, so Shulchan Aruch and Rishon Zayin Sifhei, that it says that if it's out of the kli rishon, then it's permissible to do hatmana by something that's not mosif hevel, at least on Shabbos. And the chaznish allows you to pour hot soup into a thermos because the thermos is a kli sheni. But that tonight is only mutter when it's something that's not most of hevel on Shabbos. Third tonight is that you have to have kavana lahatmin. You have to have kavana that you're trying to retain the heat. But if that's not your kavana to retain the heat, you just happen to, as when my sister, I remember, came home from Michlala, she asked me, she had to immediately question, I'm not going to say which sister, I had three sisters who went to Milcha, she had to immediately question everything my parents ever did. So one of the things she questioned is, on Friday night we had challahs came hot, my mother had them warming somewhere in the oven, on top of the oven, wherever it was, and put them on the challah tray and put the challah cover over it. My sister said, challah cover, it's hatmana. So why isn't that a hatmana problem? So she was at least smart enough not to tell it to them. She asked me, isn't that a problem? So I said, no, let's go through the four tanai hatmana. It's not a problem for many reasons. One of the reasons it's not a problem is the first tanai of hatmana, is that it doesn't totally enclose, it's the last one, it's not in direct contact with the container, which is the fourth tanai hatmana. And the other is that it's not, you're not putting the challah cover with the intention to be matmin, that you're not putting the challah cover on so that you could be matmin the challahs. You're doing it because there's a minhag to have a challah cover that you're supposed to cover the challahs. So that would not be at all a violation of hatmana. So I just mentioned this fourth tanai of hatmana is that the wrapping has to be in direct contact with the container. Shulchan Aruch and Reishon and Zayin Tzav Ches says that if it's not in direct contact, and that's what I was talking about with the crackpot, that's not derech hatmana. So that's why. Minhag Yisrael in many, many homes is, when you want, when the hot water urn doesn't get the water hot enough and you want it to get really hot, some people put a towel over the urn and that allows it to get a little bit hotter. So if you just loosely drape the towel over the urn, that's fine, because it's not hatmana. Since it's not, it's loosely draped over, it's not tightly fitting around the urn. They used to sell a product that tightly fit around the urn, that's of the Kavod Shabbos, and you'd zip it up, it mamish fit exactly. That would be a violation of hatmana. That, to put something on that, Erev Shabbos on an urn, that would clearly be not the Kavod Shabbos at all. Okay, so that's a little bit of bishul. All right. Next week we'll maybe do a little more bishul, maybe Chanukah. Let's see.